Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that registrations will be opening very soon for my next 12-week transformation program. Stepping Out from Behind the Smile is an immersive container that guides you through my holistic transformation model, helping you to step off the hamster wheel and start living a life you love. Whether you're looking to address your relationship with food, alcohol, money, or relationships, this program is designed to give you the tools you need to create a meaningful life on purpose. If you're interested in finding out more, you can DM me the word ready, or alternatively, you can contact me through my website and we'll set up a time to connect. It's important I let you know that these groups run at limited numbers. Now, I do this intentionally so that it's an intimate space for you to do the deep inner work. But because of this, spots are limited and the April intake is already filling up. I can't wait to see you inside the container for a life-transforming experience. Welcome to Behind the Smile with Ash Butters, a podcast designed to reveal the truth behind the masks we wear. Together, we look to demystify the human mind and its behaviours in relation to mental health, trauma, and addiction. My name's Ash, and I'll be your host as we uncover the real stories of people's pain and the steps they've taken to live a life of freedom in recovery. From sobriety to spirituality, join me each week as we uncover the reasons why people seek recovery and how their lives have changed by living one day at a time. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smile. Today in the studio, I have the incredible Laura Corcoran. Laura is an empowerment specialist who helps women skyrocket their energy, confidence, and magnetism fast. As a qualified psychologist, Laura has adapted her therapeutic approach away from the mainstream to encompass holistic healing modalities. Laura and I recently met at the Addiction Collective Summit, where we sat on a panel together discussing the challenges faced by women in recovery. I knew instantly that I wanted to have more of a conversation with you, Laura, and that's exactly why I've invited you here today. So without any further delay, I would love to welcome you onto Behind the Smile. How are you today?
I am so good. I love that intro. I think I might steal it.
By all means. By all means. I'll send you the recording.
I'm so excited to be here.
Now we have to share with the audience how crazy it is that we are in the same room right now because you do not live in Melbourne.
No.
So what was it, 3 days ago I reached out to you?
Maybe it was like, was it Wednesday?
It must have been. Yeah. And it's Friday today. So it's 2 days ago. Okay. So I emailed Laura and I invited you onto the show and I mentioned, you know, we can record online, not a problem. I said, but you know, if there is any chance you're in Melbourne anytime soon, maybe we wait. And then you replied with, I'm going to be there Friday. Tell me what time.
I know. And I didn't even... Like, I'm kind of like that person anyway. I didn't realize how big Melbourne was. So I was like, great, I'll see you then. Knowing that I was like, I didn't even know where St. Kilda was. That's where I was staying. And then my partner's like, oh, where is Ash? And I'm like, oh, Elkwood. Oh, it's like, it's literally next door. And I was like, oh, the stars align.
Literally. Yeah. Like, I was thinking that to myself. I'm thinking, gosh, this is amazing. What a commitment. Because I would assume you didn't have a car and who knows, you could have been on the other side of the city, but like I also just loved your commitment. You were just like, yeah, I'm there. It was amazing.
It's what I just do. Like I mentioned to you, one of my highest values is connection. So it's kind of like, you know, I know that we spoke about non-negotiables prior to the podcast too, when it's a non-negotiable for me. Like if I can get in someone's company and their energy, especially when I felt it previously.
Yeah.
And I felt that from you when we're in the summit. Then I want to be in your space because it fills me up so much.
I love that. Okay. And now share for the audience, what have you been up to today? Because you've kind of been exploring a little bit, haven't you?
I have. So my partner's going off and seeing his family and I was like just touched base with a girlfriend that I knew lived in Melbourne and she's like, oh, just stay with me. And I was like, great. I didn't even know where she was. So no plans, no structure. I was like, I just have Friday to myself and I just want to explore. So that's exactly what I did. I kind of landed here, I think at 9:30. And just from the plane journey and the podcast I was listening to and all the downloads I was getting, to the Uber driver and the conversation we were having there, to then deciding to get on a tram that I've not done for years, and the conversations and connections I had there, to then going into the city, I just felt like this excitement that I have not felt for years. Just like my inner child was just beaming of like, I don't know where I'm going and I don't know what I'm doing, but I get to do it alone. And it's just, you know, and then making my way here. And again, the conversation I just had with another Uber driver, and it's just been the best day.
Oh my goodness. I love that. Yeah. I love that. You're primed for this conversation, I feel like, which is going to be awesome. So to let our audience get to know you a little bit better, Laura, if they don't know who you are, can we kick it off with, where do you live? What does an average day look like, and what do you do for fun?
I keep wanting to say Brisbane, but I've just literally moved to the Gold Coast.
Okay.
So I've lived in Brisbane since I moved from England when I was 16. And then 3 months ago, was like, I'm moving to the Gold Coast. I've wanted to do it for years.
What inspired, what was drawing you there?
I need the ocean, the expansiveness. So for me to serve others, I need to serve myself first. And being at the ocean, it's just this feeling of you can just see so far. And I feel like it's just like this unstoppable feeling that when I've filled my tank up, that I know that I can be of service to a greater purpose to everyone around me. So even though I used to travel back and forth to the ocean quite a lot, now I'm literally there twice a day. I just love it. So that is probably what leads into what a typical day looks like for me. Yeah. So I have my kids 50-50. So 1 week, and it changes. So I've got to get flexible with the routine. But the morning starts with an ice bath. I've actually got a freezer. So yeah, we're talking about 0 degrees here, guys.
Oh my goodness, every day?
Yeah, and I was still freezing when I came to Melbourne. I was like, I don't think I've adjusted. I don't think my body has adjusted to this cold.
Was preparing you, although yeah. It's not too bad.
Well, I got off the plane. I was like freezing. I was like, oh my God. So yeah, first thing I do is I get up and I jump into the ice bath for 3 minutes. Then I get dressed and I move my body and I go down to the ocean to do that. So I'm walking along the ocean, and then I literally sit at the ocean for about an hour, do my meditations, just connect with myself. And I just get intuitively guided by what I do there, whether it's a guided meditation or I just sit in stillness and just be with myself. Mm. And then I go into the ocean and say these really beautiful affirmations to myself. And then the typical day is being of service to my clients, the beautiful women that I have in my world, and podcasting and live talks and, you know, meeting beautiful people like you and connecting with really empowered women. So that's basically what my day is about, you know, and being a mom too and a partner. So juggling all of the things. But it's like, even when I'm thinking about it now, what's actually coming through for me is like, I still can't believe that this is like my life. Yeah. You know, I just still can't believe, because I remember writing it in a journal 3 years ago, like when I was working in the government, and I'd be getting up as a single mom and I'd be crying on my way to work and crying on the way home because I was rushing my kids out the door or late to pick them up. So I was like stressed. And I was like, I just don't want this to be my life. Mm. And I believe there's more, you know, and that's the feeling that you've probably had as well. Like anyone listening to this podcast as well, you know, the fact that you're aligned with Ash and I, you know, there's more. Mm. Like you just know it, but you get stuck in the mind of, but how, you know?
Yeah, I call it the hamster wheel. And to get off that can feel so daunting and so scary. And whether that requires you to remove something from your life or just get really clear on and honest with yourself on what is it you actually want, let go of the people pleasing, stop hiding behind a smile. Like you've got to do all of that first to be able to step into a life that you love, that you can create, that you're fully aligned with. But it's a journey, right?
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to talk more about that today. Yeah. I want to know, with your morning routine, first of all, it's total goals and I love it. What happens? Let's talk about two scenarios. What does your day look like when you do your morning routine versus when you don't?
Oh, I just feel dysregulated and not connected to myself. And I think, you know, that's a great question, because I think a lot of us from the mind, because it just loves a quick fix, it's like, oh, if I just do this for 3 weeks and I'm feeling good, and then we can slip back, you know, and think, oh, we're feeling good, so we don't have to commit to them. Practice it anymore. And it's just for me now, and I've definitely been in that place multiple times where I've stopped and started and stopped and started, and now it's like, I want to continue feeling better. Like why am I actually okay with just feeling this and that's it? Like, what if it keeps getting better and better? So it's almost like when I feel any form of resistance or this is a bit boring, I'll change it up and I'll double down on what I'm doing. And that's exactly what happens. You become more expansive. You become more in tune with yourself.
Mm.
You become so connected, so more regulated for not only yourself, but everybody else around you. But I definitely feel when I'm not doing it, because there's been the odd occasion in saying that I haven't actually done the proper routine the last 2 days. And I felt good, but I filled my cup up in other ways, like coming to Melbourne and doing adventures.
Yeah. And I feel like it's almost like, if we think of it like a spiritual bank, you've been depositing so consistently for so long that a day or two where you don't get the full expression of that routine is probably not going to throw you off the beam too much.
Yeah. I love that, actually. Spiritual bank.
Mm.
Yes. I've definitely been banking a lot lately.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what happens to me if I'm not doing it. And what I do for fun, that's a great question, because I feel like every day is full of it.
That's awesome.
So I think it's more about, like, again, coming back to my values of connection. So how you were just saying, like, you know, you were just so committed to coming here, and it's like, well, I know what my values are and what lights me up. So this is fun for me. But also doing things that like I bought a theme park pass for me and my partner, so we'll go on the theme park rides. I used to be terrified of them.
Yes, I love doing that stuff, that inner child stuff.
Yeah, especially with, you know, the amount of work that we do on ourselves, and, you know, sometimes we can go 50 layers deep and I'm just like, you know what, today I just don't want to. Like today I just want to just go and do something that doesn't involve thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the whole point, is that we're not supposed to be thinking, we're supposed to be connected to our bodies. So if I feel like I'm getting a bit heavy, I will go and let my inner child play, and then I'll come back into my body and feel like I'm back to myself again.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's such a great suggestion. I want to know, of course, when we're doing these things, when we're building these muscles, because that's what I look at a morning routine like. It's almost like going to the gym for your mind. What would you say to someone who says, but I really need that extra hour's sleep in the morning, Laura?
Yeah, I would probably, I guess it's a hard one because it's like a double-edged sword. Obviously, if you are highly dysregulated or have been, because I had a question about this morning from a client, and they've been through a really stressful phase in their life, and now they're coming through the other side of it and they feel exhausted. That's their body kind of readjusting. So there's times where you need to sleep. Mm. You know, if this is a consistent though, where you're like saying, I want to get up and I've had, you know, a decent amount of sleep now consistently, there's nothing really dysregulating me in my life, then it's more of a habitual pattern that you've created. Mm. And subconsciously you might be protecting yourself from something, whether that's fear of failure or whatever, and we can go in that rabbit hole if you want.
Mm.
But there's something that's getting in the way, and it's a habit you've created of just hitting the snooze rather than that honoring of yourself. Because when we're kids, we're not taught to honor ourselves and our word and show up for ourselves. So it's creating the habit of reparenting yourself and being like, okay, these are really important goals to me. Like for me, 5 a.m., getting in, doing the ice, doing the walk, to make sure that I'm fitting that in the morning, because I also go to the gym. Mm. All of it is so important, because I think you have to have balance in all aspects of your life. So if I'm to do that and I'm committed to my, to the woman that I want to become, then I want to become her today, not in 6 months' time.
Mm.
You know, I want to create the habitual patterns of stepping into her right now. So what does she look like? So I would probably ask yourself that question, write down a piece of paper. Is it health, wealth, relationships, whatever it is in the spectrum of your life, in those pillars, who is she?
Mm.
You know, so that 6 month version of you, what is she doing? How is she speaking? What is she committed to? Where are her boundaries around herself? And then you start to implement them today.
Yeah, I guess it's that whole idea around manifestation as well, isn't it? You know, act at the frequency of or greater than the person or the version of you that has already achieved the goal.
Yeah.
And that's how you'll get there.
Yeah, because the person you are today is an identity that you formed from your past. You know, so it's kind of like the reason that you're not committing to yourself is because there's beliefs and stuff that are keeping you stuck there, which is fine. However, you can actually change it by just identifying who she is, your future version, and just committing to her right now. And what you'll find is that from that experience and that action is that your beliefs will start to unravel and you actually shed that old part of you and become her.
So for somebody who's listening here and wants to try and do this, would you recommend like getting some paper and
but perhaps writing down like an archetype of who this person is, what they look like, what do they eat, who are their friends, like how deep do you go?
Deep. Like as specific as you want to. And I remember doing this myself and I find it really hard because in all aspects of my life, really, in terms of money, in terms of health, in terms of relationships, what I felt I wanted, I had never seen it. So it was just this inner knowing of like, I know that I can have it, but I don't know what it looks like. So if this is you listening, it's okay. You know, like it's normal. So just start with what is that knowing that you want to have and that you know you can achieve. And then look at the people outside of yourself. I call them expanders or people that inspire you. And that could have been someone from your history. Like I was speaking to my Auntie Margaret yesterday. She's like an 86-year-old woman. I just adore her. Her strength, you know, like her husband, Uncle Bernard, passed away last year. They've been together since they were 16.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and we can say codependent, enmeshment, whatever you want to call it, but she was very dependent on him and she's learning how to use an ATM and, you know, ride a bus now and all of these things.
At 86.
But her tenacity, she is an expander for me. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a family member or it doesn't have to, it could be someone you follow on social media. And what is it that they're doing with their life? How are they speaking? How are they holding themselves? You know, but it's not even just the outward, it's the inward. So I would even just be reaching out to them and being like, you inspire me so much. You know, I would love to just ask you a few questions. So then you can start to implement them and put them onto your piece of paper.
Yeah. It's also the reason why it's great to work with a coach or a mentor or someone like yourself who can actually help guide you. That's really the purpose of this, right? Is it's you're not meant to have the answers.
No.
That's why you seek out people who have either walked the path or had some sort of experience or have some sort of education that can support this and guide you on your journey.
Yeah, you're looking for the people around you that are embodied in the work. And that was something that was really important to me because I wasn't embodied in the work and I'm sure we'll speak about that. But someone who you can feel energetically, you know, they're not speaking from the mind, they're speaking from the body and the heart. They really embody all of this. And it's so important to have a mentor in your corner and someone who inspires you because they will hold you to your highest. And every time your mind or your past beliefs come in or your conditioning or fear or resistance or whatever you want to call it, they will hold you to that in a really loving way. And that's what creates safety within you when you might not have that in your body, that you've got someone there that believes in you and they can see you when you can't.
Okay, so we've got this idea of starting to get clear on the person we want to become so that we can start to take the action today that will allow us to move into that person, that version of ourselves. You also lightly touched on negative core beliefs, and I was going to speak about this with you later, but let's go there now. So can you explain for our listeners what is a negative core belief? Where is it formed? And then if you identify as having them, which most of us do, what comes first, the creation of the future self or looking at the negative core beliefs, which may be preventing you from actually stepping into that person?
Yeah, great question. So in a nutshell, because we could probably do another podcast on this, a core belief is formed generally in the first 7 years. It can form in utero as well. There's so many different scientific research out there, but let's just say 7 years. You're like a sponge, you know, you're really absorbing everything in your world and making everything about you. So you're in an egocentric phase. So what that means is if you look at kids, they chuck tantrums if they hear the word no, or, you know, they get told off and the world is ended. And that's because they make everything about themselves. And, you know, as adults as well, we're still in this phase. But for those first 7 years, these are when these core beliefs are actually formed because, you know, mom and dad may have had an argument. I actually went through this the other day because I've got a really deep core wound of abandonment and believing that I'm not enough, like everything's my fault.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which constantly comes up and, you know, it's beautiful because it's the layers. But in this, it, you know, what I went back to was when mom and dad separated when I was 4 and I made that mean something about me because I didn't have the logical reason because as a child you don't. So I made it mean that dad left because of me. It was my fault. I'd done something wrong, you know, or I was flawed in some way and dad didn't want to be around me. So that's when they're formed, you know, and this doesn't always have to be, you know, them big traumas. And we spoke about this on the summit because I was just kind of like, have any trauma?
Yeah.
You know, but this can just literally be you in at kindergarten or childcare and your lollipop gets taken off you by someone and it's not given back. So that's when core beliefs are actually formed, and then they just continue on throughout our life then, and we're living these core beliefs out. You know, we're actually creating our past into our future, past into our future. And, you know, with people and situation events that we see in our future and what play out, it's actually really beautiful because it's bringing these beliefs up to the surface. But if you don't have the right support and the resources, it can just take you down a rabbit hole, and then you get diagnosed with depression and anxiety, you might form addictions and all of these things. But with the right support, if you can actually get to the core belief, then it's just so profound. Like, it's just so healing, where you actually see things very clearly, or you become really aware when they're coming into your reality, and you get to deal with them on the spot rather than compound these emotions over time until you erupt because you become a pressure pot.
Yeah, I mean, I very much relate to, like, I'm not enough or I'm not good enough. That was one that just played constantly for me when I was young, and then that manifested into perfectionism, people pleasing, constantly needing to seek external validation, and I would be scanning the room to make sure that everybody there was approving of me, and if they weren't, what did I need to do to adapt and change? And every time I'm doing that, I'm abandoning self, right? And I grow further and further apart from the person I truly am, which creates this disconnect, this void. And then for me, my experience, I filled it with alcohol. I filled it with drugs. So it was so painful to be so disconnected from self.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. That's how the beliefs are then validated. And when we're talking about a core belief, how it actually forms, it's just thinking the same thing over and over until it becomes hardwired in the brain. You know, so this might have happened to you as a child, and then it's continued coming to your reality because you have this belief that it's your fault or you're to blame and things happen in your reality. And, you know, you're forming this library, these perceptions in your mind, and then that hones in onto, see, that shows me, or see, it is my fault. And then the more you think that, or maybe that you've been told that, who knows, that's when it becomes hardwired and it becomes a core belief.
Right. So going back to my initial question, let's say somebody's listening and they're like, oh, yeah, I've got that core belief, or I've got that core belief. I'm unlovable. I'm unworthy. I'm not good enough. The list continues. What comes first?
It's a great question, you know, because I went on this trajectory of, like, you have to feel everything first. You have to feel what's in the way and really start to get to those subconscious elements. But I actually think, you know, like, the more I actually take action towards the opposite of what I feel, it actually happens really quickly. But there is a bit of a, I guess, a prerequisite to this, because we're working with the body. So if there's freeze, it's really hard for someone to take action towards something when they're in a freeze state. So sometimes you might have to work with someone to, you know, dismantle that first before you're able to take the action. But maybe you just can take slow steps too. It doesn't have to be the big leap. But you have to work with the body and start to feel, okay, I'm in a free state here. And then what happens, the more you become aware of that, the quicker you take the action, go, oh, I can recognize it. I'm just going to act in this moment. And what happens from that is that you experience a new sense of normality or a new sense of safety. And then that belief becomes dismantled even further. So I guess it depends.
I really like that idea of taking action, which means, like, let's look at the person we want to become and start to move towards that whilst still looking at this stuff, but also understanding that this stuff may stick around for a while, especially if you've been carrying it for decades. It can take a little while to shift. That's certainly been my experience. And something that I was taught early on in recovery is, I can't think my way into good action. I have to act my way into good thinking.
I love that.
So it's like, the more you show up, your brain and those old beliefs kind of eventually get to catch up and form a new reality.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's definitely both. I think I've done both journeys.
Yeah.
Where now it's kind of like, I see the belief and I act. I see the belief and I act. And then that just becomes less powerful over time. But I do think at the beginning, I didn't even know. I didn't even know it was, like, I knew I didn't feel good. And, you know, I had the belief that I wasn't smart enough. And, you know, so even back then, even though I believed I wasn't smart enough, and we're talking about when I was in the government, and I knew I needed to take the leap, and I tried it three times and gone back, take the leap, like, this is it. I actually resigned from both of my positions. I had a permanent job and I had a secondment, and I could have kept a permanent for 12 months, but when you know, when you start to understand you're on this journey, you know, about manifestation and opportunities, if you attach to safety, then you're going to kind of get a bit of a wishy-washy. Are you in? Are you out? Are you in? Are you out? And I'm like, oh, no, I'm in.
You've got to burn the boat, yeah. Right? Have you heard that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was terrified. You know, I was a single mom. I was like, the government's safety, and it's just this illusion of this is going to keep me safe. And that's when you realize that you're attaching your safety to everything outside of yourself. And I didn't, and again, I didn't know that. Now in hindsight, I can see, oh, I was actually letting go of safety outside of me and trying to cultivate that within without me doing it consciously. But I knew that. So it's kind of like that was, and then I think probably that was the, ever since then, I've not stopped jumping off the cliff.
Yeah.
So sometimes you just need to jump when you feel it and just trust you're going to be caught, because you have to look at the reality of, is this really unsafe? What I actually did was like, okay, what is the worst case scenario that can happen? I'm a single mom, which are my government jobs. Okay, I need to move back in with my parents. Not ideal, especially because it's a very activating environment for me, but I'm not going to be homeless. My children are going to be fed. Everything's going to be fine. I'll find another job. So I had to almost look at what is the worst case scenario and can I deal with that? And the answer was yes.
Yeah.
So then I jumped.
You used the word trust then. You know, you have to trust. I'd love to know, Laura, for you, how much has faith played a part in this whole journey?
Massively. And again, I don't think I knew it back then. I don't, you know, like maybe I did. I don't know. Like I know it now. I know it's a very trust, oh, I'm going to be caught, trust, I'm going to be caught, because I feel it. Where back then it was just like this hope of, because my body was so resistant to going back on that mental health unit, that I was like, I'm either going to really ruin my reputation here because I kept calling in sick and I was just kind of like, I can't serve the way I want to, that I needed to make that call. And I knew my body, I was fatigued. I was, my body was like messages everywhere. Like this isn't, you're not in alignment, Laura, move. So I'd say, yeah. And I think I've always, from way back when, I remember reading Louise Hay when I was in my 20s, you know, so, and Wayne Dyer and Oprah and, you know, all of the amazing people. So I think I've always had this, you know, like trust and, but without knowing, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And I think the longer we stay on this path of connection and discovery, and we implement practices like meditation, which really connects our head and our heart, like the deeper and safer you feel. Like I notice myself more and more just being like, I know I'm going to be looked after. I just have to keep showing up. Goes back to that idea of action, right? And I certainly didn't have that 4 years ago when I first got sober. I was like, I have to control everything, because if I let go, like what's going to happen? And meanwhile, my life is literally burnt to the ground. I don't know what I was trying to hold on to. It's a total shift in mindset.
But even that, even like on reflection though, do you think there was an inner trust?
I actually do because, and I noticed this when I was reading back through my journals, I was telling you earlier, I've been reading through my journals from when I went to rehab recently. And from that, even though like that very first day, the 24th of February, 2020, I was journaling and, you know, one would argue the worst day of my life in many ways. And there was still this sense of hope underneath there.
So, and I think that's what's important, is like, because anyone listening, it's not that you know it logically, but there's just this feeling. And even if it's slight, just follow it. And what you'll find is over time, and that's what I'm finding, is that it just gets bigger and bigger. And even though the fear is always going to be there, it's how the mind works, especially if you're moving into the unknown. It's like, oh my God, I don't know how to plan for survival here. You just, that inner knowing and that trust is just way more powerful than that fear. So you just start acting very quickly on the direction you want to go.
I love that. Faith over fear every single time.
Yeah.
So Laura, the format of this show is that guests come in and we talk about a photo from a time in their life where they were hiding behind a smile. So a lot of the guests that are on this show are in some form of recovery from addiction. That's not your story, but you're definitely an expert in the area, which is why you're here today. I would still love to ask you about a time in your life where you were hiding behind a smile, because no matter what journey we've been on, what path we've walked, we've all had a time where we were hiding behind a smile. Can you talk to me a little bit more about what comes to mind when I ask you that?
Well, the picture that I sent wasn't actually that long ago. think it might have been a year or two. But when I look at that picture, there was still a little girl just seeking love outside of herself all of the time. So when you're talking about addiction, you know, no, I've never really had a substance use addiction other than cigarettes, but I was addicted to relationships and that validation and love outside of myself. And I was choosing, or I would say magnetizing from my frequency and my beliefs, men that were igniting the not good enough wound, the you're not worthy wound, you know. And even like 2 years ago, I would just keep bypassing it. So I feel like I've always had this really strong mind of knowing where I want to go and feeling where I want to go. But I'd see things playing out. But one of my biggest traits was people pleasing. So I would regulate people and I would diminish my voice and not say how I truly felt and communicated openly. I had no clear boundaries. So even though, you know, I was achieving amazing things in my life and showing up and moving and acting in the direction where I knew I wanted to go, I was still people pleasing a lot in my life to make sure that I was avoiding abandonment, which is my core wound.
Right. And so what was the catalyst to that epiphany, that moment where you realized, if I don't let go of this behavior, I'm going to stay stuck?
It's my current relationship. Yeah, he's been a huge catalyst for me, where I wasn't willing to see my side of where I was enabling that dynamic, or where I was even not encouraging the behaviors that were going on. There was a lot of blame and projection. There was a lot of, like I said, bypassing. It's not me, it's you type thing.
And so were you, if you don't mind me asking, I'm so curious, when you entered into this relationship, were you trying to elicit those behaviors and he was calling you out lovingly and saying, we don't do this here? Or tell me more.
It was the complete opposite. So it was kind of like, as a people pleaser, we magnetize people we want to fix and rescue. So that was the dynamic. And it was like me going and fixing and rescuing. And he's such a strong, independent man. So even though, you know, we all have our own wounding and trauma, me trying to do that, he would see it as a form of control, which it is.
Yeah.
You know, manipulation. Totally. And he would call me, out, and he's like, this is really controlling. Yes. And I'm like, is it? I'm just trying to support you. Like, I don't, he's like, no, you're trying to change me. And I was like, well, I am, but for the better.
Trust me on this. You'll thank me later. Yeah.
But, you know, like back then, like I said, I didn't see that this is control and manipulation and me trying to change someone instead of love and accept them for where they're at. And, you know, that fear of rejection and abandonment, because what happens, you know, with the people pleaser tendency is that when you're not able to fix and rescue your project, then you get frustrated because they're not becoming what you need them to be to allow you to feel regulated. So he has been probably one of my biggest challenges in terms of he wouldn't allow me to try and fix and rescue him, even though he was open to it. There was times where he wanted to do it his own way and heal his own way. And I was just like, no, you got to do it this way. And are you really healing? Are you really looking at it? And I just couldn't see it at all. So I guess it was a mixture of, I guess, him highlighting those aspects of me and me not being willing to see it because I was in deep denial. And then there was a lot of in out of the relationship. We were separated a few times, and every time I've come out of that relationship, I've been able to reflect once I've gone through, I guess, the healing, because it sends you straight into it.
Right.
You know, the wound, it's like it's here, that feeling. So, you know, because I move through it quite quickly emotionally, once you're through it, you're like, oh, I can see where I've become a mom. Or I can see where I was like still seeking that from my dad through this relationship. So every time that this has happened, and more so the last time, which was like a complete severance, I was like, I'm done. This is it.
Wow.
That I was able to actually see my side of it and go, you know what? Like, I love this man and I accept him for who he is, and I've got to stop changing him. And if there's a point in our lives, because we're helping each other heal and grow through this, if there's a point in our lives where we kind of come to the platform of like, we're not helping each other evolve, then that's a loving conversation we get to have instead of this like tug of war of who's right and who's trying to fix and change.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. So a lot of humility and responsibility. And since that, we've both been amazing.
That's a big one to let go of.
Huge.
Powerful.
I'm still trying to hold on to it a little bit.
Oh, my goodness. I'm the same. I'm like, I think it's gone. I was doing breath work with my one of my dear people that I met in my life who guides me through breath work practices. And I came in one day and I said, I think this thing's gone. And she's like just smiling at me. And we're like, right, okay, we got into the session. And I was like, oh, no, there it is. It's back. But all part of the journey. I think as long as we keep trying, you know, keep showing up, creating that awareness, doing our best, that's all we can do.
Yeah, it's so true. And even like when I think about the relationship as well, even though I probably deem that as the catalyst, even the conversation I had to have with my daughter, she's 19, like family, like just stretching and pushing edges in a way that I've never done it before and had to let go of control and just be like, you know, if I let my life, then that's A-okay. Obviously, I don't want to, especially when it comes to my family and stuff, but not contorting myself, like seeing again the people-pleasing tendencies and contorting myself so people will still love me. These are my choices, my life. Like I understand it and not everyone else has to.
It reminds me so much of this yogic principle that I remember when I heard it for the first time, like it's just something that's resonated with me and stays with me, and I teach it with the people that I work with today. Is this idea, it's called a parigraha, which means non-attachment.
Oh, I love that.
And being able to have that in all areas of your life, to understand the impermanence of life. And the hardest place to do it, I truly believe, is in relationship.
Oh, so hard.
But when you can, oh my goodness, the freedom. Yeah. And like my ability to show up in a relationship now with literally no expectation of the other person.
Yeah.
And to be able to be authentic and not worry about if they're going to love me or not. Because I've got that, like I'm able to esteem from within and just, yeah, really understand that we're all going to go as a
mate. Yeah.
You know, and whether that's, you know, like friendships being a reason, a season, a lifetime, our loved ones, everyone, like no one's going to be here forever. It's a big, big topic and like one that I think we're all working towards, but that's really helped me as well.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it is. Like I think, you know, the greatest cause of suffering is the attachment to anything outside of ourselves. So the more that we can come within it, it is a practice and it's an ongoing journey, you know, but the more that you can do it, and as well, like changing your view of relationships is just pivotal. It's like knowing that you're not here to fix each other and to meet each other's needs. It's like when you're actually doing that and, you know, projecting that outward onto the other person, it's like, where am I not meeting?
Yeah.
Every single time, every time you want to bypass and put it onto the other person. And I think that's the beautiful thing about relationships, is you're both growing and evolving in this union, but there's not an attachment to this outcome that's going to be forever.
And also, you know, if you're in a relationship and you feel dysregulated or activated, like what's my stuff that's been triggered here? Not what they've done. Like what's the healing that I need to do to look at? Because when you point the finger, which again, I've absolutely done, like you don't get anywhere.
Yeah.
Like turn the finger back towards yourself and have a look at it. And often, for me anyway, when I can look at my part, I can move through it a lot quicker.
Oh, so much quicker. And it's so empowering because you're in control of it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean as well that you, because this was something I navigated through, it doesn't mean that you also take responsibility for other people's behavior. You know, like that's not your fault. You can't make anyone do anything. You know, you can only own your side of the street. How they show up and react is not because of you. That's because of their stuff. So you've got to detach again from, yeah, that I need to heal and fix and change and grow. It's like, yeah, if you were activated, but if you weren't and you just kind of held the standard, then that's fine. And it's for the other person to do that and for you to detach from fixing it.
Yeah, beautiful words. Words indeed. I need to So Laura, I'm curious. A lot of psychologists that I know tend to fall into this line of work with a deep desire to work out their own stuff. There's kind of like there's something going on in their world, whether that's conscious or unconscious. I'd love to know what drew you to this field initially.
Oh, I love that question. And probably I've never been asked that. I've always known it, obviously going through my own healing journey, but no one's ever said psychologists become psychologists to heal themselves. Do you know that? I would have denied that 5 years ago, but I don't really know. I just always knew that from a really young age. I think I was about 13. I was like, I just want to be a psychologist. For some reason, people would come and share their things with me and feel really safe. And I can see, I think it's a gift of mine, or I know it's a gift of mine. I've always been able to see people's souls or hearts, no matter what they've been through or what they've done. It's like I see through all of that and I see them for who they are. Also been quite detrimental as well in my journey, but I've just always had that gift to do that. So I think that kind of, you know, really steered me on the path of wanting to help and support other people, unknowingly knowing that I'm trying to bypass my own, you know, healing. So I think now, obviously, becoming a psychologist and going through that and then coming to a point of like, you are not embodying this at all. Like, how can you even hold a space for another person when you have no idea how to feel? You know, you've got someone who's been through something horrific, or they're telling you stories and you're like, oh my God, you know, how can we even have empathy if you can't even feel your emotions, Laura?
Yeah.
So it was a huge realization for me, and also a massive catalyst for why I then started the deeper work on myself, because now no matter what story comes my way, it's just does not dysregulate me. Where before I may have gone into a bit of panic. I would have been like, I don't know if I can help this person, like she's going to help them. Where sometimes it's just you need to listen and stop projecting from an ego perspective of you feeling like you know the answer to fix this person. Mm-hmm. It's just letting them be heard and validated in their emotions, and then bring them back and remind them of the woman that they are.
Mm. And I mean, I understand psychology, you know, it's a science degree, right? It's, yeah. And it's a meaty degree.
It is.
I looked into it for a brief moment. That's a story for another time. And I have very high respect for anybody that studies psychology. And what I'm so curious about is, after spending all that time getting the piece of paper and then becoming a psychologist, you decided to take a little bit of a pivot almost, and you started to get drawn into more holistic modalities. What was it? I imagine there was an inner knowing, an inner something driving you to start to make that change. What did it look like, and were you scared? I know you mentioned before you had to make that decision to leave the government work, but can you just take me through that in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, of course. Also, what just landed, I remembered, you know, when you're saying, why did you become a psychologist? It's about the title too. It was about me being the first woman in our family line to have gotten a degree like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, over there, I relate. I was the first person in my family to go to university as well.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. I don't actually have my degrees framed.
Mm.
I didn't even celebrate them. But interesting, isn't it? That I was just kind of like, I've got it now and what's next? But in terms of the question of why I went more holistic, is that it was mainly from the roles that I was working in the government. So I've been everywhere, the prisons, ED, mental health, addictions, everywhere. And there was just this feeling of like, none of this makes sense to me. I feel like people are becoming stuck. There's a lot of numbness. Like, what is this thing about, you know, like the body? What is the body in all of this, because I just work with the mind.
Mm.
So then I started to really, you know, and then you obviously put that out into the universe, and all of a sudden these people start to come into your world, like Peter Levine and Bessel van der Kolk and Pat Ogden and all of these amazing people that I started to really listen to. And I was like, oh my God, like that resonates with me. And again, it's not that you know it logically, it's a feeling of this makes so much sense. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm not working with the body. I'm only working with the mind. So what do I need to do? And then that's when I kind of like, well, it was actually when I separated from the father of my children. I was like, I just want to go on a retreat. And it was a breathwork retreat. And then a part of that retreat, I became a breath worker. But then that was probably some of the first time I started to feel in my body, like, and release emotion and not have shame around it. And so then I started on that trajectory, and then I did EFT Matrix and then Reiki, which was an accident. I just did it with a girlfriend for a weekend. So I just started to follow the breadcrumbs of what am I inspired by? Oh, that's really interesting. I actually did EFT Matrix with mom. So it was probably the people pleasing stuff again of, oh yeah, I'm going to go support mom with that. But then I become a practitioner. Oh yeah, I'm going to go hang out with a girlfriend in that. And then I become, you know, a Reiki. Yeah. It's just like, enveloped like that, I guess, in terms of now having a toolbox of modalities, but it's all been body related. And then really understanding when we're actually connected to our body and we're feeling that, we get a better guidance from our soul and our intuition on our purpose of why we're here, when you actually stop listening to the stories.
Absolutely. You know, it's like that Bessel van der Kolk's body keeps the score. Like it really does. Like everything is in the body.
Yeah.
And as I was sharing earlier, I find that for me now at 4 years sober, not that I don't need therapy, like I still speak to my therapist as maintenance, not as regularly as I used to, that's for sure. But what I find I get a lot of benefit from is doing more of this somatic work. And I can go and do a one-on-one breathwork session for 90 minutes and unlock stuff that I didn't even know was there. And it's incredible. Like I feel lighter, but my face also looks different.
Yeah.
So what's going on there?
With the breath work?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like if you think about it, so there's so many different avenues you can go with this, but, you know, emotions are just energy. So if you've had, you know, a traumatic event or a situation when you were younger, you know, let's use when my parents separated when I was four, because I didn't understand that situation, I wasn't able to resolve it. I didn't have dad coming to me and say, I love you. You know, I'm just going to leave soon. I'll be back soon. Or mom come soothe me in some way. There was no core regulation. I then made that about me and went into a free state. So that emotion of fear, of abandonment, of rejection, then becomes stored in my body. So if we're thinking about energy and quantum physics and this matrix of energy that we have around ourselves, that four-year-old energetic, you know, stuckness, if you want to call it, is still there.
Mm.
So even though I'm like 41, I'm still navigating this energy from my four-year-old self who's playing out, going to reject me, is going to abandon me. You have to smooth everything over. You've got to people please. You've got to do all these things. Thinking logically, like none of this makes sense, but I'm acting it out subconsciously. So basically, if you're not resolving it in the moment, because the majority of us aren't raised by conscious parents, which is fine, which is part of our evolution, that then gets trapped because the amygdala is going off. It becomes trapped in the implicit memory, which is your body. So the subconscious is linked to your body. So if you're not then being able to access it, because the breath actually allows you to go past the conscious into the subconscious. It depends what breath work you do. Which one is it?
We lay on the floor.
And is it mouth breathing?
Yes.
Quite rapid.
Yes.
Holotropic, yeah. So that's the one I'm qualified in. So what that does is it gets you into a sympathetic state, which Got is it. The stress state, which is activating the amygdala. You're able to get past the conscious and then get to the subconscious emotions, which
I
is
do a lot of shaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like crazy.
Sometimes I felt like I've been levitating.
Yes.
You know, like someone's lifting me up off the floor, which is beautiful now, but ages ago, like someone holding me like that would have been terrifying.
Right.
You know, I've never been held in that way. So it allows you to go to places that you can't sometimes get to because your ego is protecting you feeling that again.
See it.
So it bypasses it.
Right. And it almost sort of feels like it reminds me of like when I couldn't cry, like back when I was in my active addiction, I was so detached from my emotions and I very rarely cried.
Yeah.
I'm still not a great crier, but I'm definitely more connected to my emotions and it does come up more. But yeah, it's like, it's almost like you get the brain out of the way.
Yeah, you do. You get the protection part of you. Because if you think about it, similar to what we're talking about, you know, like me, you know, there might have been times as well where I did cry, and because my dad couldn't deal very well with emotions or vulnerability, he would have shut that down in me. So I would have learned, oh, like I actually don't get love or attention from dad if I cry, so I need to shut that down. But that doesn't get shut down. It becomes a shadow aspect of you and that becomes stored in the body. So even as you're an adult, it's almost like really foreign, and your resistance to even feeling any of that is kind of like, I just don't feel it because you're so disassociated, because there's a huge shield of protection going, well, there's no point in me crying because it actually doesn't get me anything, which, you know, now we know is untrue, because it actually gives us so much release from the body, which then stops it manifesting physically for us.
I want to go back to this idea of hiding behind a smile, because I feel like you're just the best person to talk to on this topic. I truly believe that the majority of us humans are walking this earth hiding behind a smile. I really do. Like,
even somebody who is not experiencing any overt trauma or anything, like I guarantee you, like it's just sort of the way I think we've been conditioned to show up, most of us. Why do you think that is? Is it this protection sense that you just touched on, or is it something else?
No, it's definitely protection, because, and there's so many different masks we can wear, but say, you know, the majority of us weren't seen and allowed to be who we are, like authentically as a child, expressive, like emotional, you know, dramatic, like whatever, you know, our expressive self was. It was shut down. So if that was deemed as in those early years, because all our mission is in those early years is to survive from a primal function. So if we deem that as unsafe, then we shut that part down and we become what other people accept of us, which is smiley and no, I'm fine, like not wanting people to see the messiness that's actually going on. So I guess it's different in each context, and I can probably only speak from my own experience, but there is no way I would let people see how I was really feeling internally, because no one can hold that. So that's what I learned, that mom and dad weren't available when I was a child for my emotions. I just had to push through independently on my own and meet my own needs and become, you know, the strong, independent woman, which I definitely am, but it was masked by a different energy. That if someone said to me, are you okay? I wouldn't even know that I wasn't sometimes.
Right, same.
I'd be like, yeah, I'm great.
Yeah.
And they're like, are you? And I'm like, yeah.
Remember my brother used to ask me that, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm great. And meanwhile, I'm definitely not. And he could see it all over me. And he would just like give me this look, and you know, he just knew I wasn't ready to look at it. But he could see for sure. It was just.
It's vulnerability. You know, if we were just taught as kids that vulnerability is such a strength, because it is,
right,
then you'd really get to know people on a deeper level. You know, it's like, and I can imagine both you and I now are in that space where we're actually more open for people to see all parts of us, because we're kind of like, well, you either love us or you don't. And
definitely,
I'm not here to mess around anymore. I want deep connections. I want the soulful conversations. And that's come with work, you know. And action and practice. But I think it's a fear of being vulnerable and having a safe place to land in that.
So where's the line then? Because you've got one extreme, which is moving through the world, wearing masks, hiding behind a smile. But then there are also people moving through this world who it's just all out there. It's not contained. It's inappropriate. It's crossing boundaries. You know, their negativity, their energy is like a vortex. Like, where's the line?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, again, that is a form of protection for them to get the needs met. You know, it's a way that they've sought to seek attention and love and validation to be highly dysregulated.
Right.
And almost, you know, if you think about a child, it's a child in an adult body chucking a tantrum. Mm. And you can imagine that somewhere along that line, they've had their needs met by acting in that way. So they've habitually programmed themselves that, okay, when I'm like this, this is what happens. And I saw this a lot, you know, in, I don't like using labels, so I'm not going to term that, but anyone that I work with a client in the mental health units or addictions or anything like that, highly dysregulated. But when I actually spoke to them, they got so much attention when they went into the mental health units or when they became unwell.
Right.
You know, so it was a form of, oh, people love me. People care about me when I'm like this. And it can be really severe, you know, like self-harm and suicidal ideation. And, you know, a lot of us are feeling that way because they're just so overwhelmed by what they feel. And then they get this sense of love and care, which again, even though they get it a little bit, it then becomes too much because they're afraid they're going to lose it. So there's a spectrum of where you can go. And I guess it depends on, you know, your level of trauma that you've had.
Yeah.
But they're both protective mechanisms of just seeking out love and acceptance.
And so the antidote to that would then be to cultivate a sense of safety within oneself, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To then feel that you can show up as your most authentic self.
Yeah, and to not make it wrong, I think, is the biggest thing. You know, no matter what someone's going through, yeah, we can have a judgment and, yeah, it can be hard work, you know, But to not make that person wrong, and when you don't make them wrong and you accept them for where they are, there's so much healing in that, because that's all they actually wanted as a child.
Totally. And so how important is it then to be able to cultivate a sense of safety to enable yourself to actually tap into your purpose? Because this is something that you and I both talk about a lot, that we help people with, is being able to be fully aligned with what you're doing in life, to create a life that you love by doing stuff that sets your soul on fire. Like, I know for me, I had to do a lot of inner work before I was even able to get clear on that. Touched on something earlier around that idea of faith and just trusting. And that was really the case for me. And often when I'm working with people who are in sobriety and it's early days and they just want to be well now and they just want to have it all figured out now, I really try to encourage them just to slow down the pace and to let the fog lift, because who they are at 1 year is going to be so different from who they are at 2 years, 3 years, because the deeper you connect, the more you know who you truly are.
Absolutely.
That's been my experience anyway. Yeah. What do you think of that?
I agree. I think when people are trying to like speed race through the journey, it's because they're resistant to what they feel and they're not willing to accept where they're at, you know, which is actually part of your healing. So when we can come to this place of acceptance and looking back at how far they've actually come, whether, you know, it's 1 day, 2 day, it's still a lot further than they were 2 days ago, and realizing that through that journey, because, you know, the whole saying is, it's never about when you get to the top of the mountain, it's the journey that got you there. Is yeah. where the deepest healing and growth actually happens. But the more that you're resisting that is what's creating your greatest suffering. And I had a chat with a client about this the other day who, you know, is, you know, suffering from some mental health issues, we'll just call them that for safekeeping. And you can hear her desperation to just get through it because it just feels so uncomfortable. You know, and I get it, because anytime, you know, you're going through some uncomfortable change in your life, then you just want to get through it as quickly as possible. And this is what I'm notorious for as well. It's like, Laura, you just go straight through. And it's like, I do, but I also try and accept where I'm at. But it's just like, I'm just really good at feeling now where I never used to be, where for some people, if you're not willing to sit in the feeling of it because you don't feel safe in your body and you don't have someone to support you through that and encourage you through that and get to connect to who you are, like the sooner you actually sit with that uncomfortability, the quicker it goes away. The quicker you're trying to rush through it, you're actually trying to bypass being with yourself in that space.
And that's when it gets stuck in the body.
That's
right?
When it gets stuck. So it doesn't matter, you know, like, and I can imagine for you, and it's the same for me, it's like, I don't want to keep repeating this pattern for myself or anyone that I support. And what is the lesson here that I need to learn in order for me to move forward is, you're not going back then, you know, because you can race through it as much as you want. And then you'll probably find yourself back because you need to learn the lesson that you didn't learn in those first steps.
Right. Right.
So it's like, let's stop bypassing. Let's just do the challenging thing of like, yeah. I'm actually okay with being here.
Yeah.
To learn what I need to learn to get to the next step. So then I don't have to keep going to step one again.
Totally. Just lean in. Lean yeah. into the discomfort. And I always find that the more painful it is, the greater the growth on the other side. Yeah. And that's what I try and remember when I'm in it.
It's so painful sometimes.
Yeah, especially for me, being in sobriety, I don't have anything to blunt the edges. Like I have to feel it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can last, I mean, I don't think it's lasted more than a week in the last year or so, but end of 2021, like it was, I had a period that was really painful for a few weeks. And I remember chatting to my dad, who's also in the rooms and sober, and he kept reminding me that, you know, when I got out the other side of this, I would experience growth, but I would also have a story that I would be able to share with other people who would one day be going through the same thing. And that's almost like a bit of a light that I, North Star that I head towards whenever I'm in those moments.
Yeah. And I love that. Are you talking about distraction as well? Because, you know, I think the biggest thing that causes the prolonging of the suffering of what you're going through is how often are you distracting through it? So I actually did this not that long ago. I'm a bit sometimes, but I'm like, I'm here for it, whatever. I know I've got something to learn here, so let's go. So I was going through a heartbreak, grief, and I cut out caffeine and I went on a water fast. And I don't drink. So I was like,
my goodness.
The distractions are going, the TV isn't going on. I'm sitting in this and I'm feeling my way through. It's almost like cold turkey everything.
Yes.
So I went straight into withdrawal because of the addiction to the relationship.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was like intense, but I also knew it wasn't. And I had this really beautiful conversation with a guy on my podcast the other day, which reflected it beautifully. He feels, or what I understood what he said, is that we're all walking around heartbroken. And then when we're going through these places, it's actually an opening of the heart. And that's why it's painful, because opening of the heart is vulnerability and potential, or what we perceive as hurt, pain. But it's actually quite the opposite. And it's the resistance to the opening of the heart that is actually what is the pain, because you're prolonging it. So I was like, I'm here for it. It's painful. Rip the band-aid off. Let's go.
Bring it on. Bring it on.
But it was the most profound experience I've ever had.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not that I would recommend everyone do that without support in all four corners.
Absolutely. Disclaimer. So Laura, for our listeners that are here with us now, if they have been nodding along and they're thinking to themselves, I know I've got some healing to do. I know I've got some stuff that's stuck in my body. What out of the things that we've spoken about today, or maybe there's something we haven't mentioned that you think might be important to mention now, what would be one thing that they could start now as a modality, something to try to support them through this journey?
Yeah, I'd want to say stillness, but there's a lot of resistance to that. I think that comes with time. I would probably get very clear on what your beliefs are. So similar to what we said at the beginning, get the quadrants happening, like health, relationships, wealth, you know, spirituality, whatever you want to call it. What are your beliefs around that currently? And who do you want to become in that? And then start to take one action step from each of the quadrants. I feel like that's probably something that's tangible and practical. But the biggest point, like, is get a mentor. Like, you need to get someone who is living the life that you want. Because, you know, the cars and the houses and the materialism, even though I love them too, your greatest return on investment is you. And what you find 100%. is, because I'll never stop investing in myself, is when you invest in you and you open yourself up, the manifestations of money, of wealth, of debt, of unconditional love does not have a price. And it, like, it's hard because I remember someone saying this to me on start of my journey. I was like, yeah, I've heard it all before. So you're probably saying that, and I get it. So it's an experience you have to have, but get curious about why you're not doing that. Why you're not getting someone in your corner? Because for me, it was like, well, I'm a psychologist and I know what I need to do, but it was just resistance and denial of me actually facing off with myself.
Exactly the same. When I first started working with a mentor halfway through last year, like the changes and the expansion that I've experienced in the last 6-7 months is out of this world, none of which would have been possible without that. You know, I may have gotten there in 10 years, but it's just like the trajectory.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Like, hold on, here we go.
And that's what everyone's after, the blue pill, you know. Yeah, like, right? they're all wanting to get through it as quickly as possible. And if you want that and stop going back to step one, you need someone who's going to hold you to a standard that is also loving and safe. You know, and there's been many of my clients that are like, Laura, like, they'll swear and they'll be like, you are like, I just hate you right now. But they'll go away and they'll come back and they'll be like, I can see it.
Yeah.
Help me through it.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you find a mentor. I've never had a client that's been resistant and ran away from me.
Yeah.
They might be resistant in the moment, but because they understand the ego and they understand the trauma and the pattern and the programs, which is the foundation of everything, once you actually bring it and expose that shadow into their awareness, it is confronting, but then they love you after it once they've got through it.
That's exactly right. It's always, always worth it. We are coming to the end of this conversation, which has just gone so quickly. I know, but there is one final question I have for you, Laura, and I'd love to ask you that now. What are your three non-negotiables that allow you to live your life today happy, joyous, and free?
Oh, I love this question because I think they've changed recently because I've gone through a pivot and a transformation. So the non-negotiables are my self-care practices. So as I explained some of them, and there's some more that I do in there that I'm flexi with. So definitely showing up for myself. I don't answer my phone and I don't do that during the day. I segment times of me time and time for others. So non-negotiables is self-care practice, very firm boundaries around this woman that I'm becoming. So like I said to you previously, who is she now? So if I don't have capacity and I don't have energy, it's a no. You know, like I need to fill me up to then be of service to anyone else around me. And the third one, which has been really challenging for me lately, but I'm leaning all the way in, is speaking my truth. Because, you know, the people pleaser tendency is very good at just not speaking the whole truth and might speak 80% of it. And then I'll leave a little bit out just in case.
Right.
It's speaking it all the way through.
Yeah.
And not being responsible for the other person's emotions in that.
Yes, I love that. That
is a stretch, but it's been really great.
Inspiring. Thank you so much for sharing. Oh my goodness. I have no doubt people are going to want to track you down. So where can they go?
The best place is Instagram at Her Successful Mind. But yeah, just reach out. Like if you've got any questions or anything's come up on the podcast, like I said, my highest values connections. So just voice note me on there or message me and I'll get back to you when I can.
Amazing. That's a very, very generous invitation. I'll make sure that I pop all of that information in the episode show notes. We say here on Behind the Smile that when we recover loudly, no one needs suffer in silence. So thank you so, so much for being here today and connecting with not only me, but everyone that's tuned in. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Ash. I feel so honored being here. I can't wait to do it again.
A big thank you for tuning in today. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by hitting the follow button and leaving a rating and review. Each rating and review helps this podcast become more discoverable so more people can hear these stories of strength and hope. Together, we will continue to remove the stigma around mental health, trauma, and addiction. Remember to reach out to those you care about, and I'll be back next week. Until then.